Hey there, this is Seth Wires from Channel 9. We're in our Channel 9 studio, so you're going to hear people walking around and doing all this stuff. I thought I would invite my friend Mads Torgersen. How you doing, buddy?
Doing great. How are you?
Good. Thanks. I have. We usually talk about C-sharp stuff, but we never actually go and do C-sharp things. So I thought instead of doing like a, hey, this is what's in C-sharp 7, instead you tell me what's in C-sharp 7, and I have an open source library that you're going to be able to look at that we're going to go in and you're going to fix it. So first of all, this is the dude that works on C-sharp.
This guy
right here. So it's kind of nervous for me for him to look at what I've done because there's probably going to be some weirdness. So be gentle.
Yeah. Absolutely not.
Okay. So let's start with what are some things that I absolutely need to do if I'm using C-sharp 7 that I may not be doing here?
Well, if there are any places where you're returning multiple results, for instance, trying to figure out how to get more than one thing back to your caller, C-sharp 7 has tuples that are excellent for that purpose.
So we'll look for that. We'll look for tuples. What would be another couple of things? So let's just list them out, and then we'll see if we can find something.
Let's say you are doing, you have some logic that is per type of a given object or a given value. You might want to use some pattern matching. So if we can find some of that in there.
Hopefully there is,
Places where you have a local functionality that you're capturing with a either, you know, you're using a lambda just as sort of a local function, if you will, or you have a private function that's really only called from one place. We can do local functions now.
I think I have something like that.
We could think about places where you have like using where you're using a try pattern, like a try get something. And look at output.
So let's do those four because I feel like that's enough to look at. So let's start with tuples. So this is a machine learning library. There's a place where I do some interesting things. So let's see if I can find that. And it doesn't matter what's happening, but I know there's some code here that looks wrong.
Yes, can you hover over the bar there, the type of So what you have here is a system.tuple, which was one of the best ways of returning multiple results.
It was the only way that I knew of, at least at the time.
Yeah, or you could use out parameters or something like that. But this has all the hallmarks of that. So C-sharp now has syntactic support for tuples. So if we start out by going to that method.
Let's go to that, go to definition. Okay.
There you go. Yes, you have your tuple, double comma double. If you just change that to open paren, double comma double, close paren.
All right, so I can just boom.
That is the syntax for tuple types.
But it looks like it's not happy.
Right. So the tuple types compile down to an underlying type that's not yet in the framework that you're targeting.
Oh, I see.
But you can get it from UGET. And actually, if you lightbulb it.
Okay, so there it is.
There it is. And you have the right options turned on in the IDE, which you have here. I can see that it offers you to just install the right package. So you should say find and install latest.
All right, let's see if it works.
It goes and finds it and accepts it and installs it and references it and
life is good.
Life is good. This is a great feature for many things, but for this tuple thing here, it's extra good.
But then there's a problem down here because I'm returning the wrong type. What is this? Do I just take this off?
Yeah, remove that, because then you have what's left is what we call a tuple expression. So that just creates a tuple of these two values, returns it as double comma double, and you're
and
good.
That's it.
That's it.
But there's going to be a problem in the on the where I'm calling, right?
Well, let's see if you have a problem. You don't.
Really?
Because value tuple also has item one and item two.
I see.
And so we deliberately created it so that it was as similar to system.tuple as possible.
So that I could just leave it and it'll still work.
Yes.
But
however, it's kind of item one and item two aren't very descriptive. You're getting two doubles back. What do they mean?
Hold on. Could I do this? Int?
Well, hang on. You're going too fast.
Okay.
What I want you to think about is what I want you to tell me is what is actually returned. What are those doubles? What do they mean? The first one and the second one. Like, is there a name for what the first one means? Because right now you're just returning me two doubles, and I don't know which is which. Like, what do they mean?
So these are actually numbers to do what's called a Jacobi rotation inside of a matrix in order to do. And those are the mathematical terms that they use: C and S. So if you look at this, like, I named this CS.
Okay.
And then this is the decomposition of CS.
Can we go back to the function?
Sure. Let's do that. So let's go.
Why don't we tell? It's probably convention that you always have C before S, but just to be sure, why don't we give them names? So if you say double C, and double S, So this is the thing you can do. You can give tuple elements names, and then you go back to the call. That thing still works. So you don't have to, have to give the names when you can, okay. But you don't have to. And now you see it's still okay to call them item one and item two, okay. But you also have a suggestion, which is these new dotted lines there. So if you see what the light bulb tells you there,
okay.
Suggests something.
Here we go.
And that is to use explicitly provided tuple name. So if you hover over that, you can see it uses the new name that you gave it instead of item one.
Oh, and now so I can do this, and it will do that.
Yeah, and you can do dot s there. If you instead do it by clicking dot, so try to
control dot.
No, just delete and,
type
the dot again. You see that item one and item two have gone away from the completion list. They're hidden. That you can still use them, but we're hiding them and showing the nice names instead.
Oh, I see.
So that way, if you want to get a tuple back and kind of use it like an object with named members, you can do that too, and you can give nice names so that when you look at a method that returns a tuple, it actually tells you what those things are with names, and you can get them by names. But you can one up this too.
Okay.
So maybe so what you're doing here is you're first getting a tuple, and then you're picking it apart into two variables here. So why not just let us do that in one fell swoop? So you can actually, when the tuple comes back, you can actually deconstruct it directly into two fresh variables.
Okay. How do I do that?
If you write what looks like a tuple there, you can say double C comma double S.
So double C comma double S. Does that work?
With parens around it.
Oh, okay, with parens around it. So let's do that.
Now you're declaring two variables in a sort of tuple-like way.
And I can take these.
Yeah, you just take those off. And what it does is declaring C, it's declaring S, but it also saying, so it's just doing a single assignment to those two variables. So what it's saying is deconstruct, pick that tuple apart, and assign the parts into those two new variables that you declared.
And this is much better because there was like three lines of code, now there's one.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I'm not using a superfluous type, which may or may not mean anything, item one, item two. I'm guessing that I can search for anywhere that has an item one and an item two,
right.
And I may or may not be able to find places to do these fixes.
Oh, it looks like you have a few.
Yeah, so it looks like I have a lot. So let's see here.
So that's a million places you can do this.
Let me right-click here, because there's another thing. If I go to Find All References, it'll also tell me where I'm using. And I can do this pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
So the reason why, but here's a question. So the reason why this one felt nice was because this is the only function that's using this. Is there going to be a signature problem when I make a change to a different method?
Yeah. I mean, it's the, as you can see, tuples compile down to a different underlying type, not to system.tuple. So if you're swapping them out in public, in the public interface of or public API, then yes, you are doing a change that is going to propagate out to the users. It may be that their code continues to just work like it did here, and continue, but you'd have to recompile it.
Okay. So it turns out that in this case, because this is only being used here, everything worked out nice.
And let's actually make it a little nicer. Can we do that?
Let's do that.
So the deconstruction here, I'm saying the two types. You can actually just say var instead of the double in both places.
Var, okay.
So if you want to infer some or all of the types of those variables, you can do that based on the types of the two things that the tuple decompose into.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually make it one bit nicer, which is if you have var everywhere, you can sort of factor that var out. You can just remove it from inside and just write var once outside. And that's sort of just a very nice shorthand.
So this.
Yeah. So deconstruct with all the default types of the variables, and you only save R once, and it's super compact, right?
So this is really nice. This looks a lot better, and it looks a lot more understandable. We took out three lines of code, made our function definition a little bit smarter, and the return type a little bit prettier, and everything seems to work. We'll do a unit test later, but I'm pretty sure it'll work. We'll leave that. All right. So what was the next one?
Let's see, next one, some pattern matching. So if you have places where you're like doing conditional logic based on the type of something,
type
based pattern matching maybe.
So this library is weird because what it does is it takes innumerable of t's and converts them into matrices and vectors of doubles. And so there's some places where I do a lot of type checking. So I think there's one right here. Let me scroll down to the bottom here. Oh man, there's a lot of code in here. I can't believe. You ever go through your code and just like, did I write that? Look, so this.
Okay. So let's see. Yeah, you have an. Okay. Yes, you take an object.
And I make it into a double.
And then you want to make a double out of it. And so you, get its type, and then you do an if checks, yeah. chain on the type.
Okay.
Okay. So this is perfect. The whole getting of the type is really unnecessary here, first of all. So let's, so
I'll let you,
you, you want me to type
yeah,
here?
Yeah, let you drive.
Okay. So, so let's, so instead of doing this, getting the type here and doing the type check like this, mm-hmm. you could also have just said, if O is bool.
Right. That would have worked.
That would have worked too, and that would have saved you some code.
Yeah.
We can discuss which is the better way of doing it. It doesn't really matter much. And then down here, you're casting it to bool because now you know it's mm-hmm. a bool. So what we can do instead with pattern matching is you can, in an is expression, instead of just putting a type here, you can put what we call a pattern. And there are a couple of different patterns that you can use, and we're planning to add more to the language. But one here is a type pattern where you actually say bool b. You introduce a new boolean
okay.
b. That is the value of O
as B.
If it was a bool.
Right.
And so now you can just say B here, and you sort of have a very nifty all-in-one type check and get the new value strongly typed.
I never like boxing and unboxing things. It's just, this is much nicer.
Yeah, and not and asking twice, like yeah. first checking and then casting and all that. So that's sort of a simple change you can do. But one thing I notice is that all of your ifs down here, oddly, here you are checking that it is an enum. And
yeah, weird. You got be ruthless. Ruthless.
Never mind that. Yeah. All of your checks here seem to be checking the type of O one way or another. Mm-hmm. So they're all about asking a question of O, like are you like this, are you like that. So it might lend itself better to a switch statement.
Okay.
And
that's not something I would traditionally switch over. Usually we switch over like enums and stuff.
Yeah, but we actually generalize the switch statement in C sharp, so that you can. So you can say switch O for any kind of object. Oh, it already put the parens in there for yeah. me. How nice. What is this thing?
Oh, sorry. There's some code completion that's happening. I'll hit yep. enter here.
Okay. So let's say we want to just do the null check inline in the switch instead of before. We could just say case null, right?
Okay.
Nothing new about that.
No.
Except now you can do it for any object. So we can say case null, return that stuff there.
Double dot NA, okay.
Yeah. Let's copy that down there. Boom.
We don't need a break anymore.
We actually don't need the break. No, we can go on forever. We don't need a break.
Yeah.
And so we can delete that line. Okay.
Okay.
So that wasn't fun, okay. but let's try something fun. So let's take this if thing here and then turn it into a case instead. We can also mm-hmm. put patterns in cases. So we can say case bool b, colon, and now we're doing the same thing again, where we're saying if O is a bool, then call it B and do this stuff with B.
Okay.
And now we can take the return statement from down here and lift it up there. Okay?
Okay.
Snap that and put it there.
Okay.
And you can see that's fine, except that it's clashing with the B I declared down there, so let's just get rid of that.
Yeah, because now we're not using it anymore.
Right.
Okay.
And then, so now you can just keep going, right? You can, actually, if we wanted to be crazy, we can do something more here, but I wonder, it's probably not a good idea, but let's just explore it. Yeah, okay. There's actually one more thing you can do here in,
let's see,
in cases.
Let's see.
You can also put a condition on a case. So you could actually say when B, so if it's a Boolean, when that is true,
then
return check the default truth
let's
value.
Let's put it in there. Heck, why not?
You want to try that?
Yeah, so, let's do it.
So we'll just, I mean, it's going to make your code worse, but.
No, it won't, because you just return this second part, right?
Yeah, the yep. first part there. Mm-hmm. And then we could do another one saying case bool.
When not be.
When.
I think
okay,
for.
Okay, bool be when not be. Yeah, we could, so.
That's for illustrative purposes.
For illustrative purposes, yeah, you return that guy there. Uh-huh. So just to, I'm sure there are, we need a semicolon yeah. there. I'm sure there are a better example of this, but I want to make sure I show that, because that's kind of nifty. You can really like sort of tailor your case to the right type and then the right conditions where that type is, and then mm-hmm. then we'll do this. Otherwise, we'll go to the next one and see.
I like it. Let's leave okay. it, because it looks more right. declarative.
And now, of course, we can keep going here. That was a bool one.
Looks like I have bool twice, which is kind of another weird.
You'd never hit this one, so.
Nope.
Same thing for character. And so we just keep going. Case.
Car C, maybe.
Car C. Return. And it looks like, let's see what you're doing down there. It looks like you have a superfluous cast here. It's grayed out.
Okay.
So we'll just take.
I think you just return C then, right? In that case? Because it'll do the implicit.
Yeah, so there we've just returned car of O, but now we can just return C.
Which looks much prettier.
Yes.
Okay.
And then let's see, the next one you have is enum, where you actually was using the is operator.
Yeah.
So we can say case enum E colon, whoops.
It went too fast there.
I overcompleted enum E.
E, okay.
Okay. Okay, so now we have a system.enum in our hand. And if we try to return that as a double, I'm going to return that. That's not going to work out because there's no implicit conversion. If we try to convert it to int in order to convert it to double, that's not going to work because enum itself does not have a conversion. It's only the enums that are ints that have that. So we could cast to object first and then cast to in order to lure it into doing it. But we already have it as an object. It's called O.
Oh, cool.
All right.
Oh,
so
O. Hey.
Oh. So we could just.
Looks like you went big O, man.
Yeah,
there
why
you go.
It's big O. Okay.
There you go.
So you can do that. Now it's actually we're not using E for anything. So you can also if you're doing one of these but you don't actually need the value, gives me an opportunity to show you can do a discard.
Oh, because, so you're not actually using the memory at all.
Right.
In this case you're pushing something into E. Here you're saying, I don't care what.
I don't know that it's more memory efficient, but it's sort of a way of saying I really don't care about this one.
Cool.
So discards is also a new thing. All right. We're almost there.
Okay.
And then you have some stuff that you want to do otherwise. Oh, time span as well. Cool. Yeah. So you want to type
that
one?
Let's see if I can.
I think
you
were.
So we're gonna say case time span. Oops. Did you press the caps lock on me?
No, that was you.
The time span.
I'm sure, it was you.
Time span of t. And let's see. And then I would say return t dot total. Was it total seconds? Total seconds.
Yes.
So I'll do that at the bottom. And let's see if it likes that. Looks like it doesn't like T, and it's because of this.
Yeah, but let's get rid of that because we're done using it.
We're not using it anymore, so I'll get rid of that.
It's just a double
decoration. And it looks like there's an L, so would that be the default?
Just a default,
catch-all?
Like
okay,
usual.
Default
yeah.
catch-all. And I can just literally just copy this, right?
Yeah. Just take the whole try-catch thing.
So I'll Control-C and then Control-V. And now I can take all of this garbage out.
I think so.
And it's happy.
Thank you.
So let me remove this because I am retentive that way.
Can we look at the whole thing?
See, that looks much more. That is not as ugly.
That is not as ugly. C#7.
And we're talking
not as ugly.
Hashtag not as ugly. C#7. This actually looks a lot better because I'm not doing weird casts only when I had to here.
Yeah.
And I'm discarding things when I don't need them. And I have this when. Okay, this looks really good.
Yep.
I like this. So cool. This is the pattern matching.
That was pattern matching. Yep.
All right. So what was the next one?
Local functions.
Okay. So there is a place. So there's a lot of times where I use funcs. So maybe I can find a func that I use in line. So let me do this func. And let me just do it over the entire solution here to find some. So func. So I know there's one that I did.
Is that one that's not in
here? It is
signature. Okay. Yeah.
There's one that's not in signature, and so now I remember this. So this is going to be some funky looking code coming in here. Oh, good. Now I have Scott Hanselman looking at my code.
Hey.
We're C#7-ing this the heck out of this. It's really good.
I just want to watch.
Okay. Okay.
Cool.
So this is a func of datetime feature to string. Why should I use an inline function?
Well. So first of all, let's write the inline function
okay.
and talk about it.
It's just like a regular function?
Yeah, so write it as a regular function instead.
Name, and then I'm going to say this takes a date time feature f, and it returns a string. I think this is a flag.
Yeah, call it flag
okay,
then if that's what it takes.
We'll call it a flag, and then I will return. Return this enum.get.
Yes.
Okay.
And actually, let's do that.
and instead of D, it's going to be flag, right?
Yeah.
And so now what I'm effectively doing is I need to delete this.
Yeah. So now you're declaring a function inside of another function, inside of the method here.
Right.
And you can totally do that now.
Holy cow, this looks dumb. It feels like I should be calling this on everything.
Yeah. But let's not fix that now. Okay, but yeah, but absolutely you should. That's probably why you factored it out, so you could use it multiple times, use the logic multiple times. And actually, you know, this is a single line method, so just a single line function, just like
arrow?
Methods, you can do it as an expression body.
Hey, now. Yeah. So why would I do this as opposed to that func?
Yes, so now you deleted the func. But the thing that happens when you have a lambda is it's a delegate object that needs to be allocated.
Okay.
And so it's certainly, well, first of all, this looks better.
Yeah, okay, it does look
but
better.
We don't always like want to add little features just because they look a little better. But it's also more efficient to do it this way. So there's a lot of allocation going on when you have a delegate like that. First of all, you allocate the delegate func object itself just in order to call it.
Okay.
Whereas this just declares a function that you can call.
This isn't stored anywhere in the heap or
right.
Anywhere.
It doesn't create an object like a delegate does. So delegates are really for when you want to pass them to something else. You want to pass a function along. Then you need an object to pass along.
Okay.
Also, actually, it's even more efficient because there's another allocation that happens, which is this a good example of that? Well, not really. But let's say that there was a variable in features here in scope. Let's say you were using that in your body.
Okay. I could do this. I could do features.getType. But that really doesn't do anything.
Yeah, but let's say you did. Then, you know, the function is closing over that, and a delegate creates an extra object to keep those things, to carry along those things that it sees from the environment of the
because
lambda.
Because that delegate might be returned out and needs
yeah,
to have
it needs
a scope.
To pull along all Got that it. Stuff. Whereas here we can do that more efficiently because we know it's only going to be used in scope of where that thing actually exists.
Because lambdas in C# capture values by reference.
Yes.
And if you have a reference, then it can't be garbage collected because that lambda might be returned out of the function and live somewhere else.
Right.
And in so this case, there's no way that captured variables are going to escape.
So we actually use a trick under the hood where the function gets an extra argument secretly that is a ref to a struct. So it's free to call it with that extra point that just points into where these things live. So
okay.
All in all, it looks nicer and it's more efficient.
Okay, so I think we'll leave that there. And I like that because I...
Now you can go back and use getName in all those places.
I'll go back and do that later. So the last one was the outvar. Is that what you mentioned?
So if you let's say you have some place where you use like get something, get value.
Like try get value, right?
Let me do try get
and see what we got here. So it looks like I found one right away, but let's see how many I have everywhere. So I have a couple of them, but looks like we'll just start with this.
Yeah, let's do this one here. So
let me tell you what's happening. Uh-huh. Here because reflection is slow, I'm actually creating compiled expressions that have the hot path into properties.
You're crazy.
I know I'm crazy, but this is really fast.
That's cool.
It's really fast. I know it works and it's really fast. Okay, so what am I doing here?
So I noticed that you have a couple of out parameters.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we have tuples that we already saw, you don't need out parameters in so many places.
Uh-huh.
But the thing they're still good for is the try pattern,
Where
you return a Boolean, out of try get value here, and then you have the, so you say whether you succeeded or not, and then the thing you actually succeeded in finding comes out with an out parameter, right? Okay. So the annoying thing about that is up until C#7.0, you have to declare that a variable separately for gathering that thing
and
up.
And this is not a pretty variable.
No, it has a very nasty type.
Yeah, sorry.
So can you copy that type for me?
Sure.
So now what you can do instead is you can declare an out variable directly where you're using it. If you paste the type in there, now you're, and then it's going to complain that it's the same one. You can comment that out or delete it. Yeah. So now I'm declaring a dictionary or string of func object in place, calling it type accessors and passing it as an out parameter here.
Oh, and, so I don't need to do this ugliness.
Right, but it's still pretty ugly.
Yeah.
But now because it's being passed there to an out parameter and we know the type of that out parameter, you can now say var instead of all that, okay, that whole type.
This feels a lot better.
So now you get sort of a double benefit here. It's declared in place, and we can infer its type because it's declared
well,
in place.
Can I do the same thing here?
Well, hang on a second. Okay. Let's just notice something that might come across as a little weird, which is that I declare it here inside of the if, but it's still...
Oh, that's right.
It's still in scope here after.
Because I'm underlining where it's all being used.
Yeah. And so that's because we chose some scope rules for if statements that if you declare a variable like this inside of the condition of the if, mm-hmm. we actually make it available after, because that's often like super useful.
Okay.
Right? Because you might be getting something useful out of the condition, but you also need it after the if. You don't just need it in the
I see. So the scope is actually at the level of...
Yes.
Okay.
But
okay.
only for the condition. So let's go... Try doing the same with result there.
Okay, so let me do var result. Wait, I need to get rid of this.
Yep. Okay. And now you have a problem.
Okay, so let's see if I understand the reason why. Because this if statement is inside of another if statement, so it loses.
Yeah, because it's in a branch.
Right.
Then things don't like bubble out of scope. Like it's in a nested branch. And mm-hmm. there, you know, the buck stops. You can't put things in scope from a nested branch here. So result is not in scope here.
But I'm looking at this, if is the same as and, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why you did an if actually.
Yeah, why is I doing that? So if I change this to an and, and do some, sorry.
Are you in VB?
My VB came out, sorry. Good. So and then there's some parentheses gymnastics that I need to do here.
Yeah, now you
see, it's happy.
Now it's happy because now both variables are declared in the condition of this if, and so at the scope level of the if, the result and type accesses are now.
And
in scope.
I can get rid of this hideous thing right here.
Yes, let's get rid of that.
And notice that I could not use var here,
right?
Because it didn't know what they were.
It didn't know where they were headed.
Okay, so let's take that out.
So here's what's interesting though is that it kind of knows. Because you're doing an and here, it knows that you're going to execute both the left and the right.
Okay.
So let's put an or instead, a double vertical bar. And now you see it's actually going to complain at you that inside of that result is not necessarily definitely assigned.
Oh, and because this is a short-circuiting or operation.
Right.
And so if the first one is true, it's going to do it. And so it never knows that it may or may not be the last one.
Yeah, okay. So...
That's interesting, but why is it in scope here?
That's a good question. maybe if you deleted that, maybe it's just only showing you one instance of the
other. I see. Well, might be like the compiler might be stopping here and saying, "Okay, this is not going to work."
Oh, I know why. It's because you're assigning to it. You're not reading from it, so it doesn't care whether it's definitely assigned or not.
Oh, okay. So it's saying that it's creating space for this.
Yeah. So it's in scope. But you haven't assigned it yet here, but here you are assigning it. So after that, it's fine because it doesn't care whether you assigned it up there as long as you did it down there.
I see. So I got the or. Okay. So I think this is pretty good. We did four different things.
Yep.
We looked at tuple, pattern matching. We looked at local functions, and then we looked at out variables. Is there any other things that people should look to?
There's a number of other things. Those are sort of. I think we sort of hit the big ones. The big ones. They're little nice things. I don't know if you have any number literals in there at all, or it's all just abstract.
I may in like the tests.
Yeah, because there are a few things just about how you can write number literals. You can do them, and you can actually have binary literals now.
Oh, nice!
Isn't that cute?
So you can do like 101.
Yeah. So it's just 0b instead of 0x.
I might have something like that.
If you have a little number, we can show it.
Okay, let's see here. Let me go to my data test, and let me go to a simple conversion tests. Here.
Yeah, you go. Okay.
Oh, well, I do have it. Oh, this is working out good.
Right, so here you have an int that could instead have been written as... Can you convert that to binary in your head?
No, not that time.
Let's see if there's a light bulb here. I don't think... We have some last-minute... IDE features that would actually let you change the base of this, but it's not in this build here yet, I think. But yeah, you could say 0b1101 da 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 da
and then see if it.
And that's just an int. And they tend to get along, right? So what we also let you do is to have digit separators and numbers, so you can have little underbars and stuff.
And what does that do? That
just
fills...
It has absolutely no effect semantically. It just lets you read your number more easily. It's just like the commas that you put in.
Oh, I see.
In numbers.
So you can do like octets and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you're doing like hex numbers as uints, for example, you might put those in.
Yeah, you put
it. You can do it in hex, for example. You can do it actually in hex.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when you're doing color stuff, you could just put the exact hex in there.
Yep. And then just to keep the little groups, like in hex, you typically have 2, 2, 2, 2.
Yeah.
In binary, you typically have them in fours. Yeah. In decimal, you'd have them in, or normal decimal, you'd have them in three. You can also put more if you want. It doesn't. It's just a syntactic issue.
So that's a number.
Little stuff
that's
like
that. A little stuff that counts.
Yeah.
Well, this has been awesome. Any other things other than number? I think we went through a good portion of it.
Yeah, I think we. Yeah, this is a good place to stop.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us. This is
Thank
the awesome Matt Storgerson. We've been learning all about C# 7 features, but instead of doing board stuff, we actually did stuff. You will see this in a repo. I'll put the links below so you can see that it actually is going to make it into the code. Thanks so much for watching. Thanks for spending some time with us. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Thank you.